morning, R.W.
Hey, good morning, Allison. Building a poem is much like building a number of things. Some plan, either on paper or in one's mind, serves as a primary control for the process at hand. Then the maker, if he or she is more talented and skilled than the average builder, might allow the process a little leeway to take on a life of its own. Even though a discerning audience will sense that form and function nonetheless remain in play as an underlying design. Robert Frost's poem, Mending Wall, does that sort of dance. We see and hear right away that the poet has a few proven shapes in mind, beginning with the irony he sets up between the poem's title, Mending Wall, and its first line, something there is that doesn't love a wall. In other words, why would anyone want to mend something that isn't loved? Frost repeats the line in the last third of the poem and follows it several lines later with a telling simile of one of the wall menders, who brings a stone in each hand, like an old stowed savage armed, who moves in darkness. Walls are one of those big topics in life that have been with the human condition so long that we often take them completely for granted, like our five senses. We have walls in our homes, walls at our jobs, walls in our cars, walls everywhere in our communities and throughout the countryside. Our modern English word wall arrived from the Anglo-Saxon wall, which was borrowed from the Latin vallum, meaning a rampart, originally a row of stakes. It is allied to the Latin vallus, meaning a stake, a palisade, literally a protection, as well as being allied to the old Irish fel, meaning a hedge. Today marks the 20th anniversary, not of the building or of the mending of a wall, but of one being torn down. That would be the Berlin Wall, which for slightly over 28 years divided West Berlin from East Berlin and became one of the major symbols of repression in the 20th century Western world. I first saw the wall in the spring of 1968 when I was 15 years old. Along with my mother and sister, I had taken a night train out of the Hauptbahnhof in Frankfurt am Main and crossed through eastern Germany to Berlin. Early the next day, I'd walked several blocks from our hotel and stood silently by myself at a viewing location 50 feet from the western side of the wall. Soon someone casually dressed but walking in regimental fashion approached, said good morning in German, and waved to a guard on top of the wall opposite us. "Do you know him?" I asked incredulously. "Oh, yes," he replied. "That's Georg. He and I worked together as guards up until last year. My name is Johann." I introduced myself, and we shook hands. Johann told me he visited the viewing station several times a week to keep reminding himself how lucky he was. He briefly described his escape, which had been easily enough accomplished because he knew exactly who would be patrolling where along his stretch of the wall. Then he pointed to different station posts on the wall and recounted what duty there had been like. After a few moments, an attractive woman came up to us, casually clasped Johann's hand in hers, and told him softly that they had to go. I bade them adieu and returned to my hotel for breakfast. Later that day, I caught a cab through Checkpoint Charlie into East Berlin to visit a camera shop that had been recommended to me for its great equipment at ridiculously low prices. So I got to look at the side of the wall that works to keep people in instead of out. I remember finding East Berlin especially gray, as though life there was missing some basic vibrancy. The next time I would see anything of the actual Berlin Wall would be 21 years later, in the spring of 1990, when my girlfriend and I were on a night train from Frankfurt am Main to Vienna. Since the previous November, when the border dividing the country had been opened up, travel through the former East Germany had become a simple thing for Western Germans to do, and what many of them seemed to want to do most, at least those we met traveling on the train, was to go to Berlin and bring back a piece of the wall. And weren't they some proud to open up their backpacks to pull out and show off their variously shaped hunks of the wall? One fellow's concrete souvenir took up nearly his entire pack. He said he had a special place in his garden for it, where it would serve as a pedestal for one of his favorite potted plants. On another stretch of the journey, we met a young woman in the dining car. She was all smiles as she held a softball-sized piece of the wall and told us that she estimated she'd be able to chip off at least 100 shards from which to make earrings for her friends. As my girlfriend and I looked at these folks' different keepsakes, each an objet d'art, We couldn't help but think of Jonathan Swift's line that walls have tongues, each of these fragments saying something about the folly that the wall had been. We also thought about what Robert Frost's bent might have been on all this, of these new stone savages armed with chunks being carried not toward a wall to mend it, but away from it to tear it down. From Orono, Maine, have a great day.